Yeah, this time round, an online interview with the fabulous Bill Jackson from the Land of Oz.
Last night, I had a dream. I was a ghost in a limousine. Robert Johnson.
Yeah, well, we're talking to Bill about making his great CD, Digging the Roots, and a whole bunch of other stuff about being a songwriter in the Land of Oz and putting down some great music. Yeah, as it says on a lot of the promotional material, it's come down to this, Bill Jackson doing it for himself, always believing that the process far outweighs the end result, then turning an emotional full circle and producing an album full of the rich stuff that we could hang our hats on. Yeah, and maybe you can find yourself somewhere here in one of Bill Jackson's songs. Just maybe he was watching you. Today in the studio we've got Bill Jackson, who's a singer-songwriter from Australia. Just released a great new album called Digging the Roots, and it's so good. We wanted to get him into the studio and chat with him about his interest in music and how he put this album together, and obviously some fantastic songwriting craft. So welcome to the Salty Dog, Bill.
Good to be here, Salty.
That's great. Tell us, as we often do when we're having a chat with people, what's your interest in music? Where did you first start to shine the light on music? What happened to you when you got interested in playing and writing?
Well, it's a bit hard to remember back about what sort of first sparked the interest, but in terms of playing, I think my sister bought a very cheap guitar, a £5 guitar at one stage, and I was the one who inherited it, and learned a few chords off a friend, and sort of went from there and started sort of writing or trying to make up my own little ditties very early on. I think probably the thing that sparked it most was the LP, and there was a lot of albums like Johnny Horton's Greatest Hits that were hanging around home, and I think when I heard Like a Rolling Stone, I think that's what changed it forever for me. I just wanted to do that sort of stuff.
Dylan's stuff.
Very much so, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's still number one on Rolling Stone's all-time greatest songs, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I mean, it was contrary to everything that was coming out at the time, a six-minute pop song.
Yeah.
Lyrics that no one could really quite figure out, but there was just something about that recording, I think, that captured everyone's imagination.
Great. Yeah. I just finished reading a book just devoted to the entire song and the recording of it.
I've read that one.
Is that right?
That's the Greil Marcus book.
That's one. Yeah, that's one.
Yeah, no, terrific book.
Yeah, but most interesting to see how they struggled with it in the studio.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting, the whole take-by-take description of how that song originated.
Yeah, fantastic thing. So you grew up in the country, in rural Victoria, or in the city?
Yeah, born in Albury, New South Wales, and then shifted down to Sale when I was very young, and grew up, did all my schooling and whatever in Sale and Gippsland.
In Gippsland. Mm. So at what age did you start writing stuff?
Started writing probably at about the age of 15.
Right. And then were they poems or were they songs?
They were poems probably more than anything else. And I think I was always fairly heavily influenced by my brother, who was in the Navy and a Vietnam vet. And he used to and continues to send me lots and lots of poems and lyrics and whatever. So the early songs were very protest orientated.
Right, right. Mm. Now, I notice on your songwriting, there's a lot of stories to tell. Is that something that comes from your family background, or it's something that just came out in you?
Look, a lot of it probably comes from a family background. We've got it's an Irish family background, so there's a lot of storytellers and within the family. But I think it's just a personal taste. I mean, I like a good yarn, basically.
Right.
And as far as songwriters go, I like to be taken somewhere.
Right, right. So who are some of your influences in that area, apart from Bob Dylan?
Well, obviously Dylan, yeah, but early on I think I also got very much into Donovan in the early days.
Right.
But anyone, you know, even the Ralph McTells, all those kind of people who told stories, basically. But also blues people, because they were telling a story. And Woody Guthrie was a huge influence.
Yeah.
I always... I always had a hankering when I heard a great song to be able to go back to the roots of that song and hear the original version of it.
Right.
And most of those people were storytellers, because it was a way, I suppose, in the 20s and 30s, when we didn't have television and that wasn't as prominent, that it's the way that stories got passed around.
Right.
Ideas got passed around.
Yeah, and probably still so, despite television.
Very true, yeah. Well, we're trying. We're trying to do it.
Yeah, I still don't get too many good ideas off television, but a good song will do it.
Very true, I agree. I mean, I don't watch television at all.
Yeah, in fact, MTV, I was always angry about that because I just wanted to hear the music, not watch it. But yeah. That was my fault. I've been told by many people to grow up and get out of that that rut. But I guess you got to have a video. But so in terms of writing, I want to talk about your writing initially, because that's what struck me. I mean, I think the songs that people are going to hear throughout the interview are fantastic pieces of work, and I'd like to talk about that album as well. But the actual songwriting... is it something that comes easy to you?
Look, I wouldn't say that I'm a prolific writer, but then again, a lot of people who are very prolific writers may only use 2 out of every 10 that they write, whereas most of the ones that I finish, I end up actually using.
Right.
But they may take a little while. Some of them come fast, like most people, but yeah, I'm not a really prolific writer, but I've very much... honed a style on this latest album, especially in the structure of songs.
Right. Mm. Right. And what style would you call it?
Well, obviously went through the style of writing in, you know, through the 70s and the 80s and whatever, where you would do a verse chorus and you'd do a middle eight and you'd have an instrumental and whatever. But always having been a fan of sort of, you know, inverted commas, folk music and blues music, which use pretty much a repeating or a revolving chord pattern,
yeah.
As blues does and as rhythm and blues does, you would find that most of the songs on this album have that type of a structure to them. So it's a revolving chord pattern, and so then it becomes you know, the job of the songwriter or the producer to try and actually make that sound like it's not a revolving chord pattern, to flesh right. it out and to give it feel and to give it texture.
Yeah, sure. What's a good example on this album that you think you've achieved that?
I think Lucy's Life, probably the opening track, is a right. song that... and it was one of the first ones that I wrote for the album, which is, you know, it's a four-chord pattern that just keeps repeating itself
right.
end on end for the whole song. But I think, you know, if you're a musician listening to it, you may pick that up immediately, but other people may not pick that up so easily.
Right.
In terms of the way the bass line moves... and the way that the melody moves, because, I mean, blues has got a revolving chord pattern, you know, it might be a 12-bar pattern or an 11-bar pattern or whatever, but it's basically 3 chords, but
yeah.
there's a lot of, you're still all the same notes within each chord, so you can do a lot of things melodically within a very structured pattern.
Okay, let's hear that track from Digging the Roots, Lucy's Life.
Somewhere deep in the city, north of the heartbreak line, she's making herself look pretty, getting ready for a good time. Rolls herself a number on a CD, catches a reflection in the TV, and she puts on some smoking blues and slides into her sailing shoes. And she looks real close in the mirror and feels pretty good about the way she gave up what was the love of a lifetime and found herself in the nick of time. Now it's work, shopping, joking, talking, music and alcohol, whatever makes her feel good and moves her soul. Like John Lee Hooker singing about the poor woman's blues, or sliding into her sailing shoes. Lucy, yeah, 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 yeah.
You know what I mean. I think you know exactly what I mean. This ain't no place for the meek and mild. And that's what makes Lucy so goddamn wild. And that's why I love Lucy's life. Yeah, that's why I love Lucy's life. You gotta love Lucy's life. But Lucy ain't nobody's wife. Lucy, yeah.
The actual stories, I know, how do they strike me? They're a bit edgy. I mean, edgy is a pretty overused word. But I guess they were telling stories of everyday life, but with a twist. Is that something deliberate, or is it just the way you look at the world?
Yeah, look, it's probably the way I look at it. I mean, probably, 80% of it on there is autobiographical.
Right.
In that sense, and it's an observation of, you know, how I've lived, how I've grown up, the people that I've come in contact with, throughout my life.
Yeah, I mean, that track Enigma, which has that refrain about Mona Lisa, I think it's a great track, because it's sort of it represents confusion in a relationship. Would that be fair to say?
I think you're exactly right there. I mean, when that track's actually gone onto a compilation that Soundbolt Records have put out as well, and when they released that compilation, they asked me to write a 50-word explanation of that song.
Right.
And it was pretty interesting, because I'd never actually sort of tried to dissect it before, but when you look at it, it's pretty much about the three different stages of a relationship.
Sure.
In terms of, you know, the initial observation, the uncertainty.
Yep.
And then the absolute leap of faith.
Yep.
In the end, in the last verse, that you need to keep the thing going. And yeah, look, that's probably my favourite track on the album.
Yeah, I mean, I like that. There's sort of a line in there, and I probably got it wrong, but it says something like, you know, well, you can call it love, or if it's not love, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, you saw that there's confusion there, but you want to go with it anyway.
Yeah, and I mean, the other thing that I put in that explanation on that compilation was the fact that love is a word that's pretty much overused these days, and I think in relationships, what I'm trying to get across with that line, if it's love or something else, I don't mind, is the fact that you really have to be mates before anything else.
Yeah.
Love is a bit of a concept, but if you're great mates,
that's right.
It's a good starting point. Yeah.
And romantic love's a new concept in the human race, I understand. But
it is.
That's what the scholars tell me.
Yeah.
Before that, was everything was approved by the local priest.
Well, that's right. I think it was invented by the concept of love was invented by the churches to appease the masses in some way.
That's right. That's right. So we're all chasing this illusion that we created, right. But it feels good when you. Yeah, it can be good.
Yeah, it's true.
So what? That Enigma track is quite. Significant, but on this album, I mean, I marked all of those songs as significant, so we'll try and work through a few of them as we talk. The actual recording of this album, it's the first one you've done in your own right,
right.
And it's been picking up airplay.
Yeah, no, airplay's been good. Triple R and PBS, which are independent and big independent stations in the city of Melbourne here in Australia, they got onto it very quickly and have been really supportive in playing tracks.
Right. Yes, I think obviously it is worthwhile pursuing. And in terms of the production of that, can you tell us about how you moved into this album?
Yeah, well, look, after I'd finished up with Urban Nomads, I'd never, which was a band that I played with for quite a while, we'd always done pretty much home-produced albums, and I decided when this was finished, I was going to try and make an inverted commas a real album.
So, yeah,
my mate Damien Boyd, who played bass with Urban Nomads, introduced me to a fantastic musician, cum producer, engineer in Melbourne called Marcel Yamuni. And for those people who know Vanessa Amorosi, Marcel is Vanessa's guitar player. That's his main gig.
Right.
And so I had a meeting with Marcel over at his studio, and he said, well, look, I really like the songs, because I put together a demo of about 20 songs for him. And he said, look, I'll put together a band for this. And so he enlisted the... Damien was the bass player, was obviously slotted in for the bass section. And then Marcel enlisted Shannon Bourne, who was a great young guitar player in Melbourne, who people would probably know. And also Daniel Zerub, an amazing young drummer. And then we also got Bruce Hames in to play some Hammond keyboards, etc. on right. there, and then some backing vocals. And so the album sort of started taking shape from that point. I sort of said to Marcel, well, maybe we should slot in a whole lot of rehearsals for this and
yeah.
get these things nutted out with arrangements and what. He said, no, don't worry about that. You know, well, they're pretty much revolving chord pattern songs, and which means that they're feel songs. They're pretty yeah. easy for good musicians to learn.
Yeah.
And he was right. I mean, probably spent about, I think we spent 3 days recording the album.
Right.
And
that's pretty good.
It is. No, it's terrific.
I think the standard on the album, the standard of songwriting and the standard of production and the finished product is very good. Do you have a favourite on that album?
Probably the song we were talking about before, probably Enigma, is my favourite song. But the one that I've probably got the most sentimental value with is a song called Settlement Road.
Right.
And because it's based around a story that I grew up with in rural Australia, where it's a lonely existence for a lot of women
yeah.
on farms, and that story is true. The lyrics were actually written by my brother in relation to a conversation he had with a young girl named Laura in a hotel in Saar one night, and that's probably my favourite, I'd say, in terms of sentimentality. Yeah,
yeah. Well, I heard you do that live. A couple of weeks ago, and that was pretty strong,
yeah.
pretty powerful lyrics on that one. And it told a great story of, I mean, I picked it up as sort of like a tragedy, sort of a life tragedy, where people have to move off a farm or whatever. Was I getting it right?
Yeah, look, what happened, and actually when I play live with the band, I've actually got a couple of friends of mine who are actors to reenact that conversation between my brother and Laura in the hotel.
Right.
And we actually take all the lights down and play that conversation before the song.
Right.
And the story actually goes that my brother ran into this girl in the hotel who was looking... She was pretty wasted and she'd had a pretty big day. And the fact is that she just left the farm and her children
yeah.
that day and left her husband.
Yeah, here's that track, Settlement Road, from Bill Jackson's Digging the Roots.
The magpie's morning tune.
She was married to the kids. He was married to the earth. She took hold like women do. October hard wind tide. And it's hard to reason with a man working on the harvest line. A wounded, deeper, painful cry. Got lost in the Gippsland wind. Simple talk was beyond the pale. What she felt within. Too many times, too much alone. Too little said by them. Scorched her soul and robbed her heart of the poor. From the gatepost to the creek. In darkness she plans the future while her children sleep. He works on and thinks of them every second of fences so
So talking about the album, 3 days to produce that album is a pretty fast process. So what do you think contributed to that? What made it easy? I'm assuming it's easy.
Yeah, look, I think probably what makes any recording easy is good performance. And we probably did no more than 3 takes of each song.
Right.
Recorded it with the rhythm sections in the rhythm section in the downstairs part of the studio, and Shannon on guitar and myself on a guide vocal up the top, with Marcel doing the mixing. So 2 takes of each song, and I think what makes it easy is good performance.
Yes. Now I know Shannon Bourne. Is it Bourne or Byrne?
What's Shannon Bourne.
Bourne. Yep. I keep saying Byrne, Bourne, Byrne, Bourne.
Yeah.
He's got some great guitar playing on there too. Some really nice electric pieces that come through on those tracks.
Yeah, look, I think in terms of roots and blues and that sort of music, I think Shannon is the outstanding young player in this country, without a doubt. He's very, very tasteful, and I think the fact that he's been playing with Chris Wilson since he was 18, Shannon, I'm not sure how old he is now, around about 26, but
yeah.
He's had a fantastic apprenticeship in terms of actual light and shade and taste, and you know, technically he's an amazing player.
Right. Yes. Now some great stuff on there. The other side of is the business side. Obviously, making a living as a musician. I mean, a question I should ask before we go on to that, I guess, is, and I've asked this before of people. A lot of people play music. How do you become a musician? How does that work for you? To actually. I mean, do you earn your living from it fully yet, or...?
No, I don't earn a living from it fully yet.
Which is what everybody says.
don't hardly earn a living from it at all.
Yeah, so but you're still a musician.
That's right.
So what drives you to keep doing it?
Great question. I don't know whether it's pig-headedness or whether it's ego or whether it's something that you know you do reasonably well and you want other people to hear it. Because, I mean, I've got a great friend who's a very, very well-known sculptor and has been for 30 years, who's never made a living out of that, and he always says, look, Bill, the process is always much more important than the end result. And so I cop out on that a lot.
Yeah.
But ultimately, any artist, whatever genre they're working in, wants other people to hear or see or listen or whatever to whatever they produce.
Sure. Does it ever get you down?
Yeah, but I'm a Sagittarian, so it only gets me down for about 5 minutes.
Yeah, you know? You have a shot of whiskey and you're right again.
I'm back on top again.
Yeah, I mean, I do observe a number of musicians go through phases, you know, when they chuck it all away and so then they come back.
But certainly, I mean, with this album, this album's given me a new lease of life, I would imagine. And even though it was released here, you know, probably 3 to 4 months ago, this is going to be an ongoing project for the next year in terms of the wider picture worldwide.
Right. Yeah. So, coming to that album, did you self-produce it? It's on a label. How does it work on the business side of things?
I was determined that once I'd heard the master and whatever, that I wanted to get some sort of a distribution for it, because, you know, a lot of independent artists end up with, 2,000 albums underneath their bed and sell 4 gigs every year, and that makes it pretty difficult. So I was actually recommended to Sound Vault Records by Sam C.
Right.
Because Sam and Glenn Mason had a few albums distributed by them. So I approached Sound Vault, and it's just a handshake thing with them. And they're pretty much a distribution company, but they do a little bit of promotion as well. And they've been fantastic. They've been really, really helpful. And, you know, the fact that you get a barcode on your album, they give you access to things like Mazar and that, so your songs are downloadable via the net. People can purchase. They do pretty good sales through JB Hi-Fi and ABC shops.
Right.
And so you get a, you know, a reasonable shot of people actually being able to source the album out.
Yeah, sure. So in terms of sales at the moment, where would you say people are currently finding? Obviously, we have a lot more people. We'll get hold of the album after listening to the Salty Dog and Bill Jackson. But at the moment, what's happening?
Well, look, it's available in most JB stores.
Yeah, JB Hi-Fi.
Yeah, JB Hi-Fi, which is throughout Australia.
Sure.
And if they don't have it, they can get it in within a day.
Right.
ABC shops, you can order it in any record store that's got access to the whatever they call it, the database that you know,
sure,
the record industry runs off. So it's widely available. You can also go to cdbaby.com
yep.
and /Bill Jackson, and you can purchase it online there.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's out there.
Yeah, while in the studio, Bill cut a few live tracks. Here's one that we did called Long Way From Water.
I was born long way from water, and I was raised in a one-horse town, a joint on Sundays and a young boy's freedom, in a land of plenty where the wheels went round. Mother said he drank too much, smoked tobacco way too much. She always said he didn't mind too much. He was the soul of this working land. I don't know when I first felt love. I'm thinking now it was that cold dark night. Poor children and a mother shivering in terror, entombed by alcohol and a Bear Street lamp. Being born the youngest, I was left alone. Two sisters and a brother flying out of home. Well, left me helpless, weak and torn, looking for love in the eye of a storm. I was born a long way from water, and I was raised in a one-horse town, a joint on Sundays and a young boy's freedom, in a land of plenty where the wheels went round. Long way, long way, long way, water. I was born long way, long way.
Any interest to date overseas yet?
Look, nothing sort of firmed up yet, but I've been not so much negotiating, but networking with people in the US.
Yeah.
In terms of my songwriting and publishing, I've got a few contacts over there, and that's going to take a while. And I'm hoping to get over there in the middle of next year for a couple of weeks if I can firm up some appointments.
Yeah.
To see people, because I've found pretty quickly that with the US thing and with the worldwide thing, it's pointless sending out albums to people unless you've got a personal contact.
Right.
They just go to the bottom of the pile.
Work out the network.
Yeah.
Yeah, work out the network. So, I mean, this showcase is obviously a lot of talent. Do you see yourself, and I haven't want to talk about your music, we talk about sort of the album and songwriting, but do you see yourself as a songwriter, like a Chris Christopherson who's principally writes songs for people? And then he becomes a cleaner, and then a then a muso. Yeah, Or are you a sort of a musician? Is there a line that should be drawn? In 10 years' time, Bill will be writing songs for everybody, or are you going to be writing and singing your own stuff? It's a hard question, but I'll throw it at you anyway.
Well, look, I mean, if I had I've lived in the perfect world, I'd like to be known as a songwriter, so that if someone had some success with one of my songs, then what I would like to be able to do is to be able to go and do small theatre gigs and whatever as a singer-songwriter, where I could make a reasonable, healthy living and get people to turn up and see me because they knew me for my songwriting. That's right. The important thing to me.
Yeah, so the songwriting is the key thing.
Yep.
And that's the, obviously, quality of that. On the musician side, let's take way back. You started playing guitar.
Yep.
Is it guitar your main instrument?
Yeah, guitar's my main instrument. Yeah, I dabble in a few other little things like harmonica and that, but mainly guitar.
Mainly guitar. Yep. And what age would you say you started playing the guitar?
I reckon probably 14 or 15, from what I remember, yeah.
And self-taught?
Self-taught, yeah. A mate showed me three chords and sort of took off from there. I've never really had any lessons. I've just tried to observe. I wouldn't pitch myself as a great guitarist, and that, but it's enough to get me by in terms. And I'm always working on that side of things.
Right. Tell us a bit about your instruments. What's your favourite instrument that you use for this sort of thing?
Look, I've got two main acoustics that I use. I've got a Martin D28, which I bought in the US a lot of years back. That's probably my main recording guitar. But my new little baby is a guitar that was built by John McGrath, who was a fantastic luthier down in Geelong, who's making guitars for some fine people. And that's it's modelled on a Gibson 00.
Right.
12 scale fret.
Yep. Mm. So they're the two, and they're all acoustic?
Yeah, all acoustic, yeah.
Amplified acoustic, obviously. Yeah.
And also working a lot in, recently I've got into playing in a lot of open tunings. So,
right.
And that's sort of inspired me, gives you new overtones and whatever, using open D mainly.
Sure, yeah. Sure. And you haven't been tempted to go electric?
Look, I've played electric in bands and whatever, but just mainly rhythm, yeah.
Right, that's your main thing.
Yeah.
So, as a songwriter, you're as a guitarist, you're a good songwriter, and whatever.
Yeah, that's right.
So, and as we noted before, there's some great people that are with you on that album that have done some great things.
Yeah. Look, my favourite probably lineup is myself on guitar with one or two other people playing acoustic instruments with me. Yeah.
Right. Mm. Right. Now, you did travel overseas in the US. You've been to Austin, you've been to London and different places. Can you tell us about some of the travels and what you're hoping to attain from those? What sort of influence you're hoping to soak up and if they worked?
Well, look, it was just basically me and my guitar and no gigs or whatever. I sat in on a lot of writers' nights in Nashville, which anyone can pretty much do over there because they're everywhere and everyone, as you know, if you've ever been to Nashville, everyone who was anyone there, or they might be just a local whatever, they're all writing songs, so it's incredibly competitive. But it's also an incredibly supportive environment as well. Everyone's sort of in it together. So you get to meet a lot of amazing songwriters over there. And then Austin, on the other hand, is a completely different kettle of fish, being a university town where there's, I don't know, University of Texas has probably got, you know, between 50 and 70,000 students. It's a very vibrant musical community, from jazz right through to old time music. It's everywhere. But I had a great time in both of those places and met a lot of good people and was very inspired. I don't know what really inspires you. I think you get inspired by the fact that that there's so many people that take what you're doing seriously, whereas sometimes in Australia, musicians are down on the lower end of the food chain. And I think that's probably the difference. I think in lots of ways, people overseas tend to look after their creative people a little bit differently.
Now this one, Hobohemia.
My livelihood
depends on crops. I'm counting on the rain. My education don't mean nothing in these hard times. I fill the boxes with the fruit, and I fill my head with rhymes. I send money home each week before I lay my head to rest. I wonder if my babies still remember me, rocking them with union songs while they bounced upon my knees.
From some of the biographical material I'd read, you didn't enjoy London.
A little bit chilly, and there was something about London that didn't quite strike.
Apologies to our UK listeners, but well,
well, in terms of the sort of music that I write and the influences that have influenced me over the years, the London music scene didn't have a lot to offer for me. I mean, there's some great folk clubs and that type of everything in the UK that tends to be based around a club system in terms of music, whether it's folk music or country music or blues music or whatever. It's very club based,
right?
And in that terms, you know, it seems to be based around a lot of competitions and that sort of thing. And
right.
I think in competitions is the only loser's music, really,
right?
I mean, look, music wise there's amazing music in the UK and that, but yeah, I just found it didn't gel too much with what I was all about.
Sure, yeah. Well, even though the Australian Idol thing comes from an American concept, doesn't it?
Yeah,
and
true.
You haven't thought of Australian Idol or anything like that?
No, I haven't thought of Australian Idol, no. I don't think I'd get through the front door. They'd probably tell me I was too bloody old.
So when you're putting yourself out around, what do you call yourself? What, a roots player, a blues player, a folk player? Do people ask you for genres?
It's really interesting, actually, trying to put this album into a slot. I've just had a review on the Roots Music Report, which is a really good website, actually, in the US, that. And they actually put me under the Roots Rock section.
Is that right?
Which was interesting, yeah. Because, I mean, when you listen to this album, it's rootsy. Some of the tracks are pretty rock-influenced, but then again, it could be rootsy, country, folky as well. So it's fairly eclectic. But I think in terms of the roots and the storytelling and the chord structure and whatever, I think they're fairly common themes that could have gone back to the 1920s.
Right. Yep, sure. And as I say, the songwriting's a good strength in that as well as the production. So, like everybody who comes through these doors, they can't tell me where they fit. But I think that's probably a good thing.
yeah.
Unless, of course, you're into hip-hop or you're a heavy rock band, and we do blues and roots.
Yeah.
So coming back to your album, Bill, you mentioned a lot of them are 80% autobiographical. What is it that stimulates to write? Is it personal relationships, or do you sort of take a broader political view? How would you describe what stimulates you to write music?
Look, it was probably, I don't know, probably about 3 years ago, I think. I don't know whether this has got anything to do with age or maturity or development as a songwriter, but I figure that I've got to really start telling it like it is and sort of, you know, lay your balls on the line a little bit in terms of your songwriting, because I think a lot of people share a very common experience.
True.
In life, and I think if you start writing about things that are real and other people, if they're real, are going to appreciate them. So,
sure.
Look, these songs are about they're about relationships, they're about development as a person. They're about growing up, and they're about being hurt, and they're about being happy, and all that stuff that we all go through.
The track there, what's it? Hobo.
Hobohemia.
Hobohemia. Can you tell us a bit about that one?
That's an interesting one, actually, because I wrote that when I was still with Urban Nomads, and a friend of mine came across that word. The story about the word hobohemia goes back to Chicago during the Depression, and Chicago was that place in the US where a lot of people migrated to because it had radial train lines out to all the fields where they picked the crops and whatever, so it was a rich source of work for unemployed people. And so, as well as people who weren't educated and whatever, Chicago attracted a lot of people who were artists or painters or songwriters or whatever, and they tended to congregate in one part of the city of Chicago during the Depression, and that part of the city ended up being called Hobohemia, which is the amalgamation of the hobo word and the bohemian word. And just thought that was a fantastic word. Then I started thinking about it, and thinking about the economic times that we're going through, and really, not a lot of shit's changed, really. I mean, people are still having to travel way out of cities and whatever to find work these days. And so I saw that as a continuum, and I thought it was a great analogy for how, you know, society hasn't changed that much.
Sure. So that's not a personal relationship thing. It's an observation on...
It's an observation, yeah.
And are you sort of stimulated to write, you know, environment songs and political songs, or is it more sort of personal journey stuff?
Well, this album probably had more personal sort of journey stuff on it, but I can feel a good political song coming on.
Yeah. Which one's that?
Yeah, look, I don't know. There's a song that I wrote a few years ago that probably no one ever heard, but it's called Spy in the House of Love, and I'll probably re-record that one, I'd say.
Right.
For the next one.
Sure.
And, yeah, look, I don't know. I think this was like a personal journey, this one.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely.
Sure. And with your songs, Bill, other people been expressing interest in recording them or playing them? You finding they're getting out and about much?
In terms of... That'll be interesting in a year's time, actually, to see
sure.
whether around Melbourne anyone picks up on them and starts maybe putting them to their sets and that over. But you don't tend to find that too much around Australia, because if you're a songwriter, about the only source of income you've got is through APRA, and you get that through live performance. So most people like to do their own songs and get a check for $3 a month out of it. But so hopefully on a wider scale worldwide, that hopefully someone might pick up on a song and say, yeah, let's run with this one.
And what about the future? Where do you see that taking Bill Jackson?
Well, look, I think I'm going to be pretty consumed with this album probably for the next, 6 to 8 months. I've already sort of written probably half the next one, and I'd like to start recording another one probably towards the end of next year.
Yeah.
I'd like to get overseas and do a bit of networking over there with this material, play as much as I can, get into as many festivals as I can, and... put myself out there. I think the best thing that's happened with this, I think, is that a lot more people now in this city and maybe in a few other places in Australia are much more aware of who I am and what I write. And so gaining that respect is important, because it will hopefully open a few more doors for me.
Sure. And will you be doing that as Bill Jackson or the Bill Jackson Band?
No, I'm going to do it as Bill Jackson.
Right, and select musicians to play with you?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, because the guys that I used on the album, they've been fantastically supportive, and they'll always play with me when I can, but they're pretty busy guys.
Yeah,
And they're costly too.
Yeah, exactly. So you talk about festivals, obviously playing live gigs. Have you got your eyes on anything for the future? You've got a sort of plan in set out for that?
Look, people have asked me this in the past month or so, and I'm very interested in either playing festivals or getting some really good supports for people who are coming out here and touring. Not really interested in playing too much in playing three sets in pubs anymore.
Yeah.
I want it to be a show, and I want people to actually get into what I'm doing. So, yeah. And that's what I like about festivals and supports. It's a listening audience.
Yeah.
But, I would hopefully like to be able to do festivals like the Port Fairy and the East Coast Blues and Roots Festival. I've got a couple lined up next year. I'm doing the Moss Vale Festival down in Leongatha with Eric Bibb and some really good people from overseas.
Yeah,
that'll be an excellent one. I'm doing the Basin Festival up in the Dandenong. So that's a couple sort of that I've got lined up. But, I need management. If there's any managers out there Australia-wide who are into what I'm doing, Salty a line and let me know. Anyone overseas who hears this, let me know.
Fair enough. And why not? I mean, that's the way to take it. The festivals obviously are a way to get exposure, and you get the chance to play with a lot of other people. A lot of people also do corporate work. Have you? I mean, the sort of material you're writing. I mean, some people I've interviewed, and I won't mention them, said, look, their main income is corporate. They're making their money off...
Really? Are they playing original stuff as well?
Original stuff. One gets flown to Sydney and performs on yachts on the harbour. And another one, Crown Casino. Another one for corporate events where they, I don't know. I mean, this is the most unusual side of the music industry that you don't really hear that much about.
No, I haven't heard a lot about that. But one thing that's quite related to that, which comes to mind, is the house party, which has become quite a big thing in the US. And the only person I really know that's doing it here with a lot of success is Deb Conway.
Okay.
And Deb's got an interesting deal. I think she goes along with her husband, Ziggy, or her partner, Ziggy. And what they do is they set up a house party, and the only condition of the house party is that the person who runs the party purchases 50 albums.
Right.
Off them, whatever they do with those albums is up to them. And I think Deb does a 45-minute show in a lounge room, which is perfectly quiet, does it acoustically with no PA, and would make quite a good living out of that. And and signs the albums, talks to people.
Yep.
Of course, she's got the advantage of that she's quite well known in that respect and can probably market it well. But that's something that I would really like to look into. I think it's a fabulous way to actually expose yourself.
So it's like a niche boutique gig.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so invite your select friends around, and Bill Jackson will be singing some tunes.
Exactly. And I think that's probably the way that the corporate thing works as well.
Sure, sure. I've been quite surprised at the the extent of it. It's like an underbelly that's quite lucrative and for musicians, and obviously
and more power to it, because they're probably getting paid what they're worth.
Yeah, and look, I recently I had someone else in, remain nameless, so they can, those who are listening to the Solid Log interviews can work it out. He's a bit of a blues guitarist,
right?
He does corporate gigs, and last one, I think they asked for 200 CDs they bought off him for distribution at the event.
Fantastic.
So it's an interesting side of the music business that seems to be picking up, and I'm thinking Bill Jackson's, you know, the original Australian songs and are a good quality. It sounds like it should fit in that sort of environment. I don't know how you go playing the guitar with a suit, though. The tie might get stuck in the strings.
Maybe I'll get a nudie suit, like Graham, you know. Always wanted one of those.
A mate of mine was the drummer in the birthday suits, but I'll leave that to your imagination.
Fantastic.
He'll kill me for saying that. So the future is work on this album and a new one probably in about 12 months.
Yeah.
And obviously people listening to this music and us having a chat, chewing the fat, as I say, we'll get an understanding of how good this stuff is. So if they want to buy or get onto Bill Jackson, how do they do it?
Oh, look, at the moment the dedicated website is not happening, but it will be. But it's quite easy to either purchase the album or to get a lot of information or to listen to samples if you go to myspace.com/Bill Jackson Music, all one word.
Yep.
And MySpace has become a great meeting point and a great tool for musicians.
Sure, sure. And globally, yes.
Yeah, and there's also a video on there that you can look at, a video of Lucy's Life on there as well, the opening track.
Great. So get to MySpace/ Bill Jackson Music, MySpace.com/Bill Jackson Music. If people want to buy the album, what's the fastest way home for that?
Well, if you're living in Australia, just go to either JB Hi-Fi or any record store. In fact, you know, I'm not sure what's the main chain that's around Victorian country towns. They're called something. But anyway, any music store in Australia should be able to order it for you if they don't have it. Or go to cdbaby.com/Bill Jackson, and you can purchase it there if you're an international,
Right, and if all that fails, get onto the Solidog website and send Salty an email, and we'll track it down.
That's right.
And the album is called Digging the Roots.
Digging the Roots.
And any reason for that?
Yeah, because I think that pretty much the roots of all the music that I've grown up with and liked, you know, and wanted to play, are probably sprinkled amongst all these songs.
Great. Yep. All right, well, thanks for coming in, Bill. It's been great talking to you about your background, especially about this new album, which is a great piece of work. And we certainly encourage all our listeners to have a listen and get a copy for their collection, because it's some great stuff on there, and they won't regret it, that's for sure. So thanks for coming in, Bill, and we wish you well with it.
Thanks, Ollie.